Hi, from Experiment Nation, my name is Romel Santiago, and welcome to Experiment Nation, the conference Reloaded, a series where we share some of the best sessions from our most recent conference.
Hey everyone, this is Juliana Jackson, and this is my session for the Experiment Nation, the conference. So today we're going to talk about experimentation post-conversions and post-purchase, or whatever you want to call it. But first, for people that do not know me, I'm Juliana. I'm an entrepreneur turned serial entrepreneur. I'm working for more than a decade in SaaS and e-commerce. And at the moment, I'm the chief growth officer for OmniConvert. And well, as my nickname says, I'm really obsessed about customer lifetime value and about the methodologies that you can use to improve customer lifetime value. So, you know what? Today, I don't have a keynote, you know, speech. I mean, not the classical one. I just want to have a conversation with y'all. Let's just talk about stuff. So let's talk about the mindset switch from quick wins, you know, and fast and reliable results to, you know, long-term mentality and profitability by focusing, you know, on the one most important thing, the customers and their journey with, you know, with your agency clients or your e-commerce brand or your SaaS software. You know, I'm not representing OmniConvert Reveal today. I'm not pushing any agenda. I just want to make you guys think. I want to make sure that you will ask yourself questions. Are you really embracing a customer-centric agenda focused on delivering, you know, to your clients, you know, some business wins, or are you just pushing your clients' agenda by just giving them, you know, marketing win, like revenue increases and so on? And I don't know why am I doing this. There has to be a mindset switch. Like, for way too long, we have been entrapped as marketers into following a culture where everything, you know, matters but the customer. And we are speaking about improving customer journeys, and we're speaking about, you know, different KPIs and metrics that are driving revenue. We acquire customers that are not sticky, that are not happy, that don't stay with us for long. And this happens because they're focusing on the wrong things. So we all do it somehow, and I feel like we're just encouraging each other to just, you know, prolong the status quo. So I want to talk about tool fatigue first. Ever since, I don't know, maybe since the early 2020, when we when COVID started, the whole conversation about, you know, tracking data, using data to guide our decisions and so on. But like, wasn't it that always the case? Like, why are we always, you know, acting like there's something new in the market when actually it's something very old? So wasn't the case of being data-driven before 2020? And now, aren't we just suffering a platform, you know, fatigue? Because on the outside, it might look like e-commerce, for instance, and the people that work in e-commerce marketing are thriving based on the abundance of, you know, tools at their disposal. And they're like, you know, like bigging each other up, and we're making it happen, and, you know, everyone's shaking hands and bumping stomachs, bumping bellies. But the reality is, like, we have a tool for everything, for ads, for traffic, for social media management, for loyalty, for website optimization. We have customer data platform analytics tools, personalization tools, blogs, oh, the whole Shopify app ecosystems, I don't know, CRMs, email marketing, everything. But the thing is that what I'm trying to show with this slide here is that we're trying to fix every problem that we have with installing a tool. But, you know, can tools really fix bad strategy? I don't think so. We are all working for or with, maybe, I don't know all, but like a majority of us that are in this conference are working with or for e-commerce brands who are, you know, like, and we're just like overwhelmed with the fact that there is this need of a quick win, of a quick return. And, but that's not growth. That's not progress. It's just movement. We're installing tools to track and measure everything. But if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there, right? And how will that help you in your mission of generating growth for your clients or, you know, for your company? And I had a friend, Matthew Brand, that says, like, you can track anything that you want, be it, you know, your own data or foreign data, but that doesn't mean it's going to be useful. So the only ones that are really suffering is our clients. Like, if we're agencies here or software vendors or whatever, the only people that are actually suffering are the clients. So me, I represent a SaaS vendor, but I don't have time to play the tool war game with competitors when the biggest problem right now is the know-how, because most marketers are trying to fix bad strategy problems with installing tens of tools. They're also quite expensive, you know, like you waste hours in demos and onboardings and back and forths. And, you know, all of these things add up to your acquisition cost, because the real problem can be solved by just spending time and energy in improving customers' experience and delivering, you know, better services. But people are like, oh, Juliana, but we got to do sales and grow. I mean, sure, but by understanding customers and what they want from you and what's the job that they're hiring your products for, why do they buy from you? You know, you'll be able to fix broken customer journeys, such as the way you communicate with your customers on their own terms, on their channels that they prefer, and you can deliver a better experience. And surprise, like the outcome of this is just lowering your acquisition cost. And then, you know, like, is the data part. Data has become such a buzzword. So it's like this whole data-driven thing is like the next, I don't know, CRO. I'm kidding. I'm playing. It's mostly because we're generically falling on data, you know, to base the guessing that we do. And we just use data, you know, to justify some decisions that we make. And I mean, a lot of times, you know, we can be wrong because we rely on data to make decisions. Yes. And of course, why wouldn't we? Data is sexy and is there to prove a point. It makes it easy to support our arguments. But without context, we can, you know, replicate the successes or fully understand the shortcomings that data conveys, right? And the problem of context is real, but I will talk about this a bit later. So this is like everyone right now, everyone is excited and wants to be data-driven, but the reality is like, while we look at data to argument or justify marketing decisions, sometimes, let's admit, it's freaking overwhelming. And even us as marketers or maybe e-commerce owners or whoever is watching this, we have so many tools installed. We're measuring everything. But at the end of the day, why are we supposed to do with all this data to actually make progress and move the needle? And I'm just going to say, you know, like 1 second here and tell you that no matter how much you want to be data driven, and I know that it's so sexy right now to be data driven. Being data driven is expensive as fuck. It is very hard to implement. And once you get into this process of becoming data driven, you have these conversations with clients as an agency or as a vendor, as a consultant. And you explain to them what does data-driven actually means and what are the changes in the mindset and the way they're doing business are, you know, supposed to be. So 99% of the people just back off because it's crazy and because it's expensive and because it makes, you know, it forces them to redo the whole way they're doing business. So being data-driven is expensive as hell. And most of the times it requires a full reconstruction of how you collect data. And you know what? This is the reality. Most companies aren't playing to win. Most companies are playing not to lose. And I don't remember where I read this quote, but it did hit home. Like, we're all playing safe. We are all playing not to lose instead of winning. Winning means going full circle. And how can we win in marketing if we don't think long-term and if we don't do the necessary efforts to enrich the data that we have with real customer insights and implementing the customer voice in whatever we do? Because sadly, you know, data alone, quantitative cold data, is not enough. And you know, like the truth is that the risk aversion often, you know, overshadows our ability to create meaningful experiments and draw actionable insight from the data that we collect because we're afraid. And, you know, this takes me to the next chapter because let's face it, there's a huge echo chamber in marketing. Guessing games, being blinded to the context and we're being blinded to the context. We are optimizing SEO numbers. And it's something that has taken e-commerce marketing, because this is where I am right now, in a vortex of very bad decisions. And we all make them, even me. And I wouldn't be here today talking about this if I didn't leave to tell the story. So we see data, we draw conclusions, we convince ourselves it's true. you know, and then we surround ourselves with folks that think the same stuff and they don't challenge us to think differently, right? So are we just turning into those customers we have or the partners we don't want to work with? Are we hitting really like a status quo and finding a comfort zone because we're calling ourselves data-driven? Is it like we're so afraid to lose that we are just, you know, we're afraid to risk and play bigger? I mean, and you know, let's just enter the echo chamber. Let's talk about it. I mean, this is the Cambridge definition of an echo chamber, but moving to our reality at hand, this is the e-commerce, you know, enter the e-commerce echo chamber, which is a fictional space where everybody agrees with everybody, you know, like it's like those LinkedIn posts, like, yeah, you know, conversions are good. And everyone is like, yeah, they're good. Agree thoughts. Like this is something like I'm laughing, but this is a very serious problem in marketing and especially in our sector. It's a huge echo chamber and everyone is bigging each other up for the smallest shit. So the problem is that, and I give this example of the pop-up, you know, with the spin the wheel pop-up that increases conversion rate. Yes, it does. I get it. I don't know how, but that bastard increases conversion rate. But obviously, it will affect your credibility as a brand. And even if you might, you know, have tricked some people to buy and give you their email addresses one time, they're not going to come again. It is very, very likely, you know, for them to come again. So, you know, like, you got people on social media right now very happy to help you, you know, with their expert advices. And I bet that in 2011, when Chanelis came up with the term growth hacking, he didn't think by 2021 this will become the staple of gimmickry and so-called gamification of conversion rate optimization or customer lifetime value retention. So you know what I did? I just asked some friends to share with me in the past the most ridiculous growth hacks that they've ever heard or read about that are thought to move the needle, but the reality is like, you know, it doesn't. So this is it. Like I had people here dropping growth hacks on me. And I had Elise and I had Lisa and Nelson. I mean, obviously I'm not going to read this to you guys, but I made you, you know, I made you a bigger move. And you know what? I just built a compilation of growth hacks fails compilation. All of these responses were too good not to put together. So here it is. This is an article with everyone's thoughts on this matter. But you know what? Like, this is funny, but you know, it's game over. It's game over. Let's settle this once and forever. There is no such thing as the gimmickry or gamification of retention or customer lifetime value in my case. You cannot bamboozle or manipulate retention by silly discounts and VIP programs and concierge programs or creating personas for your store. You can. All this expert advice on this topic, on my topic, is centered around manipulating customers, pushing sales agenda, having zero knowledge about how and why people are buying from you. And you might trick people for one or two orders, but consumers won't stay with you if you have a crappy post-purchase experience. But like, okay, so I want to make it seem like it's all doom and gloom, but you know what? The reality in my industry in e-commerce is that most e-commerce companies use at least, you know, two different tools to track data. So, you know, like, it's not that it's a problem of measurements. Again, it's not a problem of tools. It's a problem of context. So most businesses ideally, you know everything about their customer minus the why. Why do customers buy? So you need to be able to get past the surface layer of this. And I'm going to stop this slide right now because I'm epileptic. This is not helping me. So I want to switch on this note to talk about why do people buy and why, what does this have to do with the post-purchase experimentation that, you know, I want to talk to you about. I mean, it's great from a CRO perspective to get people to buy from you. It's great to have website conversions and which are not always the sales. I know. But for most of the, you know, for most agencies or companies, there is where everything ends. But I want to show you that it doesn't. So let's take it from here. So the ultimate question, why do people buy? So people might initially buy from a company because of their product, of how they taste, how they smell, how great they would, you know, they would feel if they would use their programs or products or just, you know, consume them. So it might be, But it also might be that people are driven by other things that, you know, just the sole benefit of the brand's product. So consumers hire and fire products or brands mostly all the times because of the emotions. So there are three things that I want to talk to you about today that happens in the purchasing decisions and what's happening after the purchasing decision, which is context, outcomes, and trade-offs. So first of all, I cannot even speak or think about the buying process versus the selling process without mentioning Bob Muesta. So his last book, Demand Side Sales 101, was epic and extremely helpful to me in understanding how to determine and focus more on uncovering the demand rather than just being focused on optimizing the next, you know, sales campaign. So a lot of this, you know, following slides are very inspired by his work. He's such, like, he's the best. Bob is the best. So. Okay, so right now, this is how most companies think that people are buying their product. Like most brands or marketers think that the consumers are just literally perusing the internet, looking exactly for their product, find them and then explode in excitement. Some of these people call it impulse purchasing. Let me tell you something. There is no such thing as impulse purchasing. Nothing is random. And I'm willing to be proven wrong. And I prove some people wrong based on this conversation in the past. So there's the same e-commerce companies that think we're, you know, people are perusing the internet to buy their product. They look at the buying process as something like this, very linear. Like you're just on your phone. Like I'm just going to be on my phone right now. I'm going to see an ad and I'm going to be like, oh shit, this is what I was waiting on my life. So I'm just going to buy it very fast. I'm going to get it delivered and I'm in love and I'm ready for you to send me your 20% discount campaign and make me buy again. So, I mean, people are happy, you know, companies are happy, sales are going up, but no one asks themselves what's happening after that post-purchase and how you can use that historical data to stimulate smarter acquisition, to get better traffic to your website, to improve the customer experience on site and improve the customer experience post-purchase. But see, this is why I want to have a conversation with you and I don't want to give you everything from the start. I just want to make you ask yourself some questions. But as you can see, and this is very serious, it's not that simple. Consumers go through a set of sequential steps while they are buying a product. So a buying process is the sequence of steps that a consumer takes while making a purchasing decision. So a normal consumer purchase includes the recognition of needs and wants. So, you know, next comes the information search, followed by an evaluation of all the choices. Finally, the purchase happened and post-purchase evaluation follows immediately after. So our job as e-commerce marketer or as experimenters or optimizers, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, or brand owners, is to make sure we thoroughly investigate all these aspects of the buying journey and understand that not only for the people that have already, you know, made the decisions, but we need to understand, you know, what's the demand? Like we need to take the demand and uncover it. So a lot of people are trying to make this part easy and think it's looking like this, but it doesn't. It doesn't. It takes time. Yeah. But if done right, this type of process and uncovering this type of process can transform your business massively. So as you can see, you know, this is the e-commerce flywheel that we came up with at OmniComfort, and this is a healthy e-commerce flywheel. So this one follows the buying B type of process, this one here, the type B. It doesn't follow this one because the decision-making in e-commerce and the whole customer journey is not going to be linear. It's always like this one here in blue, which is very similar to the first, to the type A buying process, right? This is very linear. It's just like whatever, demand gen, customers, money. But then the actual one is that you have to get customer feedback. You have to understand, you know, like how can you give a better experience? How can you build better products? How can you, you know, improve customer retention? So word of mouth happens and then that word of mouth and the customer satisfaction is going to generate more sales. So I was telling you about something earlier when I went into this last part of my keynote, context, outcome, and trade-offs. So most businesses, as I said, know everything about the customers or consumers, but the why. So you have to dig way past the surface layer to understand why customers chose you. Why do they shop from you? Why are they hiring your product? So qualitative research is crucial if you want to develop customer loyalty, if you want to develop a healthy post-purchase experience. So you cannot play the guessing game with your customers. They are not created equal, and you need to consider that if your aim is retention and customer satisfaction and improving post-purchase experience, knowing these three things about your customers will basically set you apart, which is context, which is outcome, and which is trade-offs. So there we go, you know, like, when people buy, they don't buy products because of random reasons. They have a job they need to fix. So they are seeking an outcome. So just like in this image, you think people that buy a hammer buy it because they need to collect the mortgages, the one, the Stanley carbon steel wall hammer. No, they just want to buy that hole on the wall that they will put a nail in to hang a picture. They will buy that hammer that helps them do work and feed their families. Or, I don't know, other reasons. Like, but people buy to make progress. So the job, the outcome is the why. So you need to be able to identify the why so you know how to position your product to make sure that people that are looking for your product, for, you know, a product to fix their job, they're looking for a solution to fix their job, and they will find the product. No one is going to look for the Stanley carbon steel claw hammer. Okay, so people buy to make progress, and if your marketing fails to communicate outcomes and progress, you won't be the right person for the jobs the consumer want to hire for. And as you can see here, instead of selling features on your product page, instead of, you know, dropping prices or showering people with discounts, you know, this is the way you are speaking the product language, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work long term, and it's not sustainable. Instead, you have to start speaking the outcome language, the job language. You are selling moments and progress, not just the carbon steel hammer. So the jobs to be done methodology for qualitative research is a game changer. You will learn how to speak into your customers' hearts, helping you see them more than just as transaction or just numbers. So as you will be able to learn from Bob Moesta, if you research and read his work, first, you should create an interview procedure with your customers where you can understand exactly what are the contexts, the outcomes, and the trade-offs that people do before they decide to buy from you. You got to pay attention because, you know, we are only interested in the people that made the decision, not the ones that didn't, because you have to have, how can I explain this? You have to understand what makes people decide that this is the day that I'm going to buy from this company. And I guess this takes us to more data. But as I'm wrapping it up, of course, this is going to take us to more data. And it's going to take us to, you know, the nail that hits. We got to hit the nail in the head. See, when English is not your first language, you're going to mess up expressions. But qualitative research is essential. So it's like the jobs to be done represents research and, you know, into the psychological reasons why people buy your products. Qualitative research done on a larger scale of people, even though, you know, it gives you maybe like a different type of emotional response, is still great to do because the, you know, like this is how you're going to find on a bigger scale what are your, you know, product issues, your services issues. So it's very important that, you know, you have to assign people in your company that does this research, because again, these are the things that are going to set you apart when you're building the customer journey, when you're doing your positioning, when you're doing your marketing, when you're doing your website optimization, and so on. So do not skip the qualitative research, because qualitative data plus quantitative data equals love and money. And this is how you, as an e-commerce marketer, as a marketer or a brand, you will get the context, because data without context is just numbers. And you want to know why your customers found you, wifed you, married you, and divorced you. Cool. So this takes me to like, I'm not even sorry. Where am I going with this? Okay, CRO is dead. CRO is dead. Nah, I'm just playing. but lately the quality of conversions from ads is fresh. And this is because this is how most people are measuring growth. So I'm gonna close this presentation with something that I want you guys to think about. A lot of companies and marketers and consultants and agencies, this is the way they're measuring growth. This is the outcome of that. And I know it's a perfect meme, but honestly, do yourself a favor and move away from measuring growth like this. Because yes, revenue conversion rate and AOV are important, but those are not the metrics that you're looking for if you want to improve post-purchase experimentation. And just do it like this. Understand that the main KPI for retention, loyalty, and customer experience is customer lifetime value. And if your customer experience is shit, you shouldn't even dream about loyal customers or happy customers. Focus on meaningful data, the result of your, because the result of implementing this data insights and research into the way you're measuring growth is going to translate into your long-term profitability. So this is the way I define growth: customers multiplied by the ratio between the customer lifetime value and the acquisition cost equals growth. And as you guys can see here in the customer lifetime value part, customer lifetime value is highly impacted by the net promoter score, the effort score, the customer experience and margin. So you have to switch from here to here if you want to optimize the whole customer journey and not just the website. And no, CRO is not dead. So, even Shopify said it, gimmicks don't work anymore. Acquisitions are more expensive than ever. Conversion rates have dropped. And we cannot move with the way the market is moving just by buying a new tool or getting a new tactic or whatever. This is a mindset problem. The mindset and the status quo, the fear of losing, which takes me again to this slide. We cannot play just not to lose anymore. You have to play to win. And the only way we can win right now is not through growth hacks, it's not through gamification and gimmickry. It's just by switching our mindset from fear to progress. So I don't expect you, whoever's listening right now, to drop ship and go move on the sun, move on to the sunset. But I hope that today I made you ask yourself a question. Just one. I don't know what question, but if I did that, then my mission is accomplished. So just, to wrap it up here, from fear to progress, are we just going to go back to the basics? And the biggest problem that I see right now in optimization is that most companies adopt tactics to grow, and most agencies just sell tactics. And the problem with that, and which pisses me off, is that a lot of companies don't understand that the way that technology and data communicates through different tactics that you are doing is through one simple part, which is strategy. And a lot of people are skipping the strategy part a lot. So they're just, there's companies that hire different consultants or agencies or whatever that are implementing tactics without measuring before what's happening in that company. And then you get the burned results, the ones that I was talking about before, those fast kicks, those quick wins. But the problem is that it's not sustainable and it's not going to be long term. And these are the things that are missing from the whole specter. So I'm pissed off because data strategy all together do not get enough respect. So if you want to grow your company, the only plausible way is that you will grow it in this day and age is that if you implement a strategist and a data strategist, or even better, if they're the same person, it's even better to communicate with your agency. So if you're an organization and you're working with agencies, great. But if you don't have an internal strategist, and if that agency doesn't have a strategist that can build a bespoke, strategy for yourself, you're going to be fucked in the long term. So yeah, this is it. This is it. I'm all over these social media as the COV lady. You can connect with me. I hope that you asked yourself a question. I hope that we will see less status quo. I hope we will break down the echo chamber. And I just hope that we are going to be focused more on the whole customer journey rather than just, optimizing for funnel and conversion rate. Thank you. And we are Experiment Nation. And CRO is not dead.